The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Welcome to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. I'm Paul Sweeney, alongside my co-host, Matt Miller.
Every business day, we bring you interviews from CEOs, market pros, and Bloomberg experts, along with essential market moving news.
Find the Bloomberg Markets Podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts and at Bloomberg.com/podcast.
A mixed tape out there, as Greg was just reporting. We got the Fed coming up. I think it's going to be kind of important this Wednesday to hear what we, see what we're going to get from our Federal Reserve, and the markets are certainly paying attention, as they are to earnings, as we get into the real meat of earnings season this week. Rebecca Felton, Senior Market Strategist for Riverfront Investment Group, Richmond, Virginia. She is, like myself, an alumni from the University of Richmond. And Matt, do you know what the University of Richmond mascot is?
University of Richmond mascot. Southern soldier?
Spider.
A spider. Oh, yeah, I should have known that.
Right, Rebecca?
Yeah.
The spider.
The only one.
To the other people out there, yeah. We don't have to share a mascot, do we, Rebecca?
No.
We do not. All right, Rebecca, what are you telling your clients, as we kind of get into this earnings season, get it some more color from the Federal Reserve? What are you telling your clients about these markets? We've had a little bit of a lift off the bottom, but I'm not sure what to make of it.
Well, thank you all so much for having me this morning. We're a little more cautious than the last time that I spoke with you all. We've actually, the only asset class that we are overweight right now in our balance strategies is cash, because we are cautious. At this juncture, this is a busy week with the FOMC, durable goods, GDP, and 170 companies or so are reporting earnings. So there's a lot to digest, and we think it's going to be volatile and potentially to the downside.
It's interesting. So this meeting, we all expect 75,
yep,
right? And the question is, how far does the Fed go, and when, if at any point, do they turn around? I heard Stephen Englander on Surveillance this morning say he thinks 3% is going to be the terminal rate, and then they'll hold for 5 or 6 quarters, which is an outlier forecast, obviously. But we also quote Vince Reinhardt in our Bloomberg story. He thinks the Fed's going to go over 5%. And then turn around at the end of 2023. What do you think, and how important is that, Rebecca?
Well, I think those expectations are very important as it relates to folks' forward, projections for what the market should be valued at. We believe that the Fed is going to keep their foot on the accelerator given what their inflation target is. We know that they are looking for a number of 4 or better in terms of 4 or lower. And here our last the last print was 9%. So there's a long ways to go between 9 and 4. And we just don't see them letting up on the tightening anytime soon.
Rebecca, you mentioned that this is a busy, busy earnings week. We got some big tech companies as well as General Motors tomorrow that Matt pays close attention to because he's still waiting for his Chevy, pickup truck.
Silverado
pickup truck, whatever. What are you looking for, Rebecca, from earnings here? What are you and your teams really focusing on?
Well, the headwinds that we are particularly looking at this week, from big tech, with almost 60% of their revenues coming from overseas, We expect to hear a lot of worries about the strength of the dollar and how that's going to hit earnings. The inflationary pressures are still the big buzzwords. You're seeing more and more companies talk about layoffs, hiring freezes, rescinding job offers. So there's a lot to be worried about in terms of what the tone is. Now earnings themselves have been coming in a little better than expected, but the energy sector still is the one that seems to be driving that top line headline number for earnings growth year over year. You have about six sectors in the S&P that are forecast to have lower year over year numbers than last. So that is problematic when you think about the fact that net net 2022 earnings are still pretty much where they were at the beginning of the year, in that 8-10% range for consensus. And we think that that is vulnerable at this point.
Yeah, too high. What do you need to see to get less cautious, Rebecca? I mean, in terms of earnings outlooks, in terms of valuations, in terms of the Federal Reserve, what kind of picture do you need to have before you can put more of that cash to use?
Well, we need the one thing that we need to go down is inflation, right? But some of the other economic indicators that have been falling, we'd like to see them stabilize, right? You're seeing the housing numbers start to turn over. Some of the most recent employment week-to-week numbers, even though that unemployment rate has come down, we're seeing some of those unemployment numbers continuing to tick up. So there's a lot that needs to stabilize to the good before we're going to get more positive on our outlook for equities at this point.
Hey, Rebecca, when you and I were in the Robbins School of Business at the University of Richmond, Dr. Earle did not teach us that bonds could have double-digit declines in the first 6 months of a year. But here we are. Is that time to just say, I just got to buy credit here, I got to buy bonds, I got to go long?
Well, we have actually, for the first time in a while, increased our allocation to fixed income. We are more neutral there than we were. And we've kind of spread out the allocations. We've got some treasuries. We've obviously got some investment grade, but we've added back some high yield because we think that it sort of pays to wait here, and we are not concerned at this juncture about, you know, credit quality and that sort of thing in terms of defaults. So we've added back and we're neutral, and it is more attractive now than it's been in quite some time.
All right, Rebecca, good stuff as always. We always appreciate getting your perspective. Rebecca Felton, Senior Market Strategist, Riverfront Investment Group. And what river does it front? The James River. The James River in Richmond, Virginia. And if you haven't been to Richmond, Matt,
I have not.
You need to go down there.
I would like
to
check it out.
It's very cool. Lots of history. Lots of really nice people.
I've never been to Richmond. I've never been to Charlotte.
Yeah, Charlottesville is in Virginia.
Charlottesville. I've never been to Chapel Hill. No, I'm just thinking of all these sort of southern, supposedly beautiful places that I still have to check out. I've never been to Savannah.
Yep, another good one.
Yeah.
Charleston, all down there in our beautiful southeast. That was Rebecca Felton from Riverfront Investment Group.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
All right, I'm looking at INGO, the index browser on the Bloomberg terminal. Total corporate bond returns year to date, minus 12%. Just extraordinary. On the high yield side, minus 10.5% in the U.S. corporate. So a lot of work to be done there from our fixed income.
Wait a second. Global high yield.
I'm looking at U.S. corporate high yield.
I'm seeing bigger drops globally. But
right. All right. Yeah. Bloomberg Markets today is brought to you by Commonwealth, supporting more than 2,000 independent financial advisors with the solutions they need to grow a thriving business. Commonwealth, go where you grow. Visit Commonwealth.com to learn more. So again, tough sledding year to date in the fixed income markets. What are those folks doing here? How are they positioning themselves for the second half? Stephen O., global head of fixed income at Pinebridge Investment, joins us. Stephen, have you ever seen a first 6 months of a year like we had this year?
Well, it's certainly been an extraordinary year, not only in fixed income, but I would say across all asset class markets. Although in many respects, I don't know that it was completely unanticipated, but I think the magnitude has been surprising to everyone.
In what sense do you think people expected this? Maybe got on the right side of the trade? Short?
I think the expected component was the fact that if you go back to prior several years, post-COVID, even pre-COVID, you know, asset prices from the risk asset standpoint have been buoyed by central bank liquidity injection into financial markets. And so, you know, unlike traditional cycles where if the key driving impact of asset prices is the push by central banks globally to add liquidity into the system. At some point, if the conditions existed whereby they would withdraw that liquidity, then you had conditions set up entering this year whereby you would get both a sell-off in risk assets as well as in risk-free government bond assets overall. So you had synchronized to the downside as a reversal from what we had seen, which was synchronized to the upside.
All right, Stephen, we're going to hear from our Federal Reserve this Wednesday, 2 p.m. Wall Street time. We'll get a press conference at 2:30. What do you expect to hear from your Federal Reserve?
You know, the Fed is not going to make any surprises, and I think the market is not focused on what they're going to do with respect to rate hike. I think what the market is watching for is how is their tone potentially shifting in terms of the level of aggressiveness going forward, and in particularly whether there will be much in the way of acknowledgement of recent data indications that appear to indicate that the impact of the rate hikes is starting to filter through into a demand withdrawal and the rising risk of a recessionary type of scenario, which would pull back their pace of rate hikes overall. And that's in part what's been driving the market to rally recently. It's sort of this adage that slightly bad news is good news because that would result in the Fed slowing down.
So where do you see the Fed stopping and turning around? Because it seems like forecasts are all over the map, although the shape that's generally expected is, you know, hitting the terminal rate at some point next year or at the end of this year and then coming down before 2024.
You know, there's sort of the near term. What do we think is the Fed is going to do in this cycle? And what do we think is the longer term policy path that may diverge from this cycle overall? And as you noted, there is quite a divergent set of predictions forward. And I think you cited there's some strategists that are talking about 4 or 5% type of level of policy rates. We think that is such an incredibly unlikely scenario. And in fact, if that scenario played out, you know, I would say the 10-year is going to trade below 2% because I think there would be an expectation of a very, very hard landing, which we're not going to get to overall. You know, our base case expectation is that the Fed is going to continue its path, but after this rate hike, they are going to throttle down and toward a glide path towards somewhere in the low 3% type of level. But that's for this cycle. And I think longer term, the Fed is not going to be maintaining a average neutral rate with a 3 handle on it, but we will be back into the 2s.
I will say I was quoting Vince Reinhardt earlier. He thinks that the Fed is going to raise to 5% or higher, and that unemployment could rise to 6%.
Oh.
So that's a pretty worrying
like
scenario.
An outlier to me.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's nice to note, though. Stephen O, Global Head of Fixed Income at Pine Bridge Investments, joining us. We appreciate that. He got his undergrad from Wharton. That's pretty good. MBA from Northwestern. Everybody I know got their MBA from Northwestern is pretty darn smart. Stephen O kind of falls into that camp.
Speaking of Volkswagen, this has been a story that has been blowing my mind all weekend long. Christoph Raufall joins us out of Frankfurt. He's the bureau chief for that office, and he's also my go-to guy. When it comes to Volkswagen, anything I want to know, I
call him. You're my go-to guy, so Christoph, he's your go-to guy?
He's the top guy, basically. Okay. Christoph is the man. Christoph, when I saw this news, I was on the subway heading downtown, and I almost fell off the bench. I know that there's been a lot of friction between Diess and the workers' unions and the state of Saxony, but that seems like that's what you're supposed to have in that job, right? What I didn't know was that he was failing at execution in terms of delivering software for important new products like the Porsche Macan, the electric version of the Macan. Is that what finally drove him out?
Yeah, hi. Well, first of all, thanks very much for the very kind introduction, Matt. That's incredibly kind of you. You're totally right. That story did come broke on Friday evening, pretty much out of the blue, Friday evening European time. We knew there have been quite a bit of friction about like how the way how he runs the company. They have been facing software issues for a number of months already, but we weren't quite aware that the problems would create so much internal unease basically within the group that he would actually be pushed out, because that's essentially what happened. Basically, the key stakeholders decided we need a fresh start under a new leadership, and therefore Mr. Diess, who has been credited with Volkswagen's strategic realignment towards electric mobility, was effectively ousted.
So let's talk about what this means for the company, because you have, over the past few years, done such incredible reporting on what Herbert Diess was building there. Investments planned of more than $90 billion to change this internal combustion car maker into an electric sort of software engine and battery maker. Is that going to continue? Is that going to go forward? Or is his successor, Oliver Blume, going to have to put together a whole new plan?
No, I think we can definitely expect that the strategic direction will continue. They will basically stick to their goals to sell far more fully and partly electric vehicles in coming years. They are building 6 battery cell factories in Europe alone, plus looking for a partner to build a battery cell factory for the U.S. factory in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and other projects in China. So it's basically a pretty wide range of different initiatives and investments programs. Those we can expect to remain unchanged. What will change, though, I think, is that there's going to be a much stronger focus and sort of like an improvement in terms of like tracking the operational progress of these individual efforts, rather than saying we need to do this. We decide on like the strategic direction, but then sort of like not following up and making sure that these projects actually come to life on the assembler line or in the respective factory.
Is it basically, I'm assuming that some Porsche and Piëch family members were like, damn it, he's not delivering the Macan. All right, let's take the CEO of Porsche, Oliver Blume, and put him in charge of the whole thing. Then he'll produce an electric Macan. Is that the idea?
Yeah, the problem there was that basically under the new structure that Diess has initiated, Porsche was sort of dependent on a centralized initiative to develop car software for all different brands within Volkswagen Group, which included and still includes Porsche. And that, I think, was one big point of criticism, that to sort of like take the autonomy to develop their individual software away from the brands and expect that one unified division within the company can serve all the individual brands. That did not work out. You mentioned the fully electric Macan, which is being delayed. Audi cars are delayed. Volkswagen cars face delays, and that's something that they can't afford going forward. And I think that's basically why they decided to make a change in the leadership position.
Right. Christoph, I'm reading some of the reports coming out of Wall Street on this news. Bernstein saying, and I think they're kind of mixed generally speaking, Bernstein saying Volkswagen is making a bad governance situation even worse. What do they mean by that?
Yeah, as you know, Volkswagen has been planning to do an IPO, a partial listing of the Porsche sports car brand on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange in the fourth quarter this year. So the goal to go ahead with this plan was basically to give Porsche more autonomy within the Volkswagen Group. Now, that's a slightly different or complicated narrative to deliver when, in fact, the guy who runs Porsche will, going forward, also run the mothership. That's probably needs some more explaining to do so that all the analysts and investors actually get on board. And at the moment, because, I mean, the development is still pretty fresh, it was decided on Friday, took many people by surprise, including some of the supervisory board members, but that's definitely something that they need to iron out and explain to external investors as well.
Yeah, why would you want to buy Porsche shares if the guy's going to be distracted by also running Volkswagen, Bentley,
and they still haven't listed that thing, right?
Ducati, Seat,
wow.
Skoda. You know, it goes on and on and on. And they have, I thought 400,000 employees. They have 668,000 people working there. Christoph, that's way too many. Can they reduce headcount?
Has been traditionally very difficult for a company like Volkswagen. They've actually added more headcount rather than cutting it down. They've done more sort of components and parts in-house than some of the other car makers who have like outsourced some of the manufacturing to car parts suppliers. Volkswagen does a lot of things and a lot of operations in-house. But of course, from a headcount perspective, it's a very, very big company, and they will definitely need to streamline some of the operations, especially in the whole like combustion engine world.
All right, Christoph, thank you. You're the go-to person on Volkswagen, and so says Matt Miller, and I thought he was the go-to person, so you must really be the go-to person. We appreciate getting your thoughts, Christoph Rawald, Bureau Chief, Frankfurt and Munich.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So, there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. Those with the ambitious, out-of-reach ideas, begging to become real solutions. They share a vision for how our world and our lives can thrive when bold thinking meets strong silicon. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy through the power of supercomputing. They dream of trust and privacy for all, of advancing and expanding education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to build something better, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Let's bring in Anna Wong, Chief U.S. Economist for Bloomberg Economics. Anna, you've got an inflation call. You guys at Bloomberg Economics, I'm going to blame you as an entire group. You've got a high inflation outlook. Talk to us about how you're thinking about inflation.
Right. So, you know, and for forecast this year, we usually use a bottom-up approach where we look at the price trajectory of cars and clothes and housing rents. And using that approach, it will tell us that inflation CPI headline will likely be hovering around 8% or slightly more than that until October this year. So, really? And then looking forward to next year, then it's harder for everybody, right? Because it's hard to know what's going to happen to oil price or even car prices next year. And then we use a model-based approach then. You know, one of the problems with inflation forecasting is that there's a lot of uncertainty over it, particularly since the pandemic. And even the way that the Fed looks at it, they consider this risk to inflation, right? So our model takes into account this uncertainty and this risk, and we forecast basically the entire distribution, like what is likely going to happen. Instead of asking, what is the inflation rate going to be next year? We ask, what is going to be the likely distribution of inflation rate next year? And using as input oil prices, unemployment rate, federal funds rate, we forecast the distribution, and that is telling us that the chance of inflation falling below 4% is very, very slim to minimal.
But most importantly, because I have a bet with Kriti Gupta that last month's headline CPI print was the peak. Am I going to win that bet, or will we see anything higher than 9.1% in the next couple months?
Well, you know, this is the interesting thing. If you look at the mean forecast right now for headline CPI, it looks like that's the peak. You seem to have won. But if you look at the distribution of risk and think about the past year, where have the surprises tend to be? So what we see is that the monthly inflation rate in the next 2 months has to be perfect, meaning that it cannot be lower than where the consensus is. There cannot be more shocks, supply shocks. If that's the case, then you are winning the bet. But if not, we could easily see another peak around August or September.
What do you expect from the Federal Reserve this week, Anna?
We expect 75 bips. But if the Fed has switched to a risk management way of looking at the world, and that's what our inflation model, modeling the entire distribution of inflation, would suggest that, it's likely that the peak has arrived, but you just, given the kind of risk that and uncertainty we have seen over the past year, it's just not wise to assume that baseline would be the sure thing.
So will Jay Powell give us any hint as to what's coming? I mean, 75 bips is what everybody expects for this meeting. The important thing is what happens at the next meeting.
I think he will stay on the message, which is that the Fed will be data dependent, and there seems to be some progress on the inflation front. We are seeing commodity price coming down, but we cannot assume that is for sure going to happen, and that the Fed will continue to tighten until he sees a string of inflation decelerating reports.
We do have at least 2 months, though, or about 2 months until the meeting after, right? Because they skip August
vacay.
That's intelligent, by the way. Everyone in the world should be that civilized.
Yes.
And then they don't come back for a meeting until September, I think, 20th or 21st. Will they have a clearer picture? By the way, then they don't come back until November. Will they have a clearer picture by September, you think, of the inflation risk?
Yeah, so there will be two CPI report before the September meeting. There will also be two jobs report before that meeting. And one of those CPI report will be weak because we know the July print is going to be soft. So then it depends on whether the August print would be, would be soft as well. And it seems like based on the behavior of commodity prices and where, you know, the economy is cooling really rapidly, there's a good chance that August would be, you know, not like 1% monthly run rate, rather would be around 0.5 or 0.4 even monthly rate. So I think that you have a good chance of winning your bet. But I still think that anything could happen. And, you know, what if we have a hurricane again? Because assuming that because the hurricane season usually begins late in the summer in the U.S. And if you get a refinery.
Sorry. I was just quoting.
Well, the weather people are actually expecting a very active season, hurricane season this year. And if you have a refinery plant hit by another hurricane in August, then I would say, all bets are off on gas.
Map go is when you need that.
Yeah,
see where the refineries are in, you know, coming hurricanes. All right, Anna Wong, Chief U.S. Economist, Bloomberg Economics.
Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Markets Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to interviews at Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast platform you prefer. I'm Matt Miller. I'm on Twitter at MattMiller1973.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. I'm on Twitter at PT Sweeney. Before the podcast, you can always catch us worldwide at Bloomberg Radio.
Intel is the spark for the dreamers who do. They dream of a life with no diseases, of cleaner, greener, more reliable energy, of advancing education by bringing AI everywhere. Intel is the spark to start something new, to know that no dream is too daring when you have the right foundation. It starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Success. It's discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management and investment banking firms in the industry. Stifel. It's where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.